Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd, and for Brian Lehrer, the EEOC, that's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, is re-examining its guidelines on the use of criminal background checks in employers' hiring practices. At a time when more and more employers are running background screenings on job applicants, last month the EEOC held a public meeting in Washington focusing on the extent to which individuals with arrest and conviction records face barriers in getting hired. Some commissioners and advocacy groups are concerned that employers' use of background checks can lead to discrimination in hiring practices. Some members of the business community, however, including industry trade groups like the National Retail Federation, have urged the EEOC not to bar criminal background checks. Joining us to discuss the issue is Glenn Martin. He's Vice President of Development and Public Affairs at the Fortune Society. It's a nonprofit in New York that works with formerly incarcerated people. Glenn, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show.
And we want to ask our listeners, Glenn, to join us, especially those who've looked for a job and found that a run-in with the law has gotten in the way of getting a job. Or if you are an employer who uses a criminal background check in your hiring practices and would like to weigh in here, please give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And listeners, not only the Brian Lehrer Show, but the EEOC also wants to hear from you. They are soliciting comments on the issue right now on their website. But I don't want to discourage you from calling. So call us first and go to their website second. All right. So, Glenn, let's start with the current EEOC guidelines in terms of background criminal checks. What's the scoop there?
Sure. So over 25 years ago, there was a directive issued by EEOC giving guidance to employers on how to consider background checks, taking into account that employers who have blanket policies against people with criminal records potentially are discriminating against people of color disproportionately because of people of color being disproportionately impacted by the criminal justice system. And so with the huge expansion in the use of background check, which you talked about at the beginning of the segment, it's time for them to really revisit those regulations. The fact that, you know, any mom and pop business these days with a credit card and access to a computer can pull down a background check. And while Pandora's box is wide open on access to information, what we would like to see at the Fortune Society is the government giving more guidance to employers on how to consider those background checks. Not that employers shouldn't have the information, but that they should be given guidance on how to consider it.
Ah, so let's be really clear. You're not proposing a complete ban on background checks across the board, but guidelines on how to use the information once the employer has it.
Yeah, I think it would be really Pollyannish to assume that we're going to be able to close that box at this point. I think we live in a world where access to information is becoming increasingly important. And so for us, I mean, if you give a credit card company a person's credit information, the Fair Credit Reporting Act also gives guidance to companies on how to consider that information. Hmm. And similarly, we'd like to see employers have more guidance on how to consider criminal records, because most people, to be quite honest, get their criminal record information from the evening news. And you know what they say, if it bleeds, it leads. So all the negative things make it into the media. And unfortunately, like at the Fortune Society, we see hundreds of people each year who come home from doing time in jail or prison and mm-hmm. who want to get their lives together. And unfortunately, because of the stigma of the criminal record, can't get an opportunity in the labor market.
Now this is something you yourself have experienced, isn't it?
Correct. So I did 6 years in prison here in New York State before coming home 9 years ago. I was lucky enough to be one of the last people to benefit from college education in the prison system, and went to over 35 different employers, overly qualified for most of the positions I applied for, and was turned down wholesale by most of them based solely on the criminal record. And for the ones who did hire me, by the time I got home and they took a closer look at the application or did a background check, I had a follow-up call that essentially said, sorry, we've changed our mind. And this is in a state that actually has has a more stringent anti-discrimination law for job seekers with criminal records that goes beyond EEOC directives.
You're speaking of New York State.
Correct, New York State. New York State is sort of ahead of the country, if you will, by passing a law called Article 23A of New York State Correction Law over 30 years ago, which gives very clear guidance to employers on New York State's policy. I mean, it says that employees can consider things like risk to public safety and risk to property and so on, which responds to employer liability concerns. But then it says that you have to go a lot further and consider age at the time of the conviction, severity of the conviction, evidence of rehabilitation, and so on.
The kinds of guidelines that you're looking for, you suggest that the existing directive in states without those kinds of laws, such as New York has, there's no teeth to it, or there are no teeth to it. There are no directives, no guidelines.
Yeah, with the exception of the existing EEOC directive, there's about 10 other states that have similar laws to New York, none as far-reaching. New York State's law is enforceable by the New York City Commission on Human Rights and the State Division of Human Rights, or by filing a private lawsuit. But what we would like to see is for the EEOC to issue more stringent directives, maybe mostly modeled after New York State's anti-discrimination law, to just give more guidance to employers on how to make those decisions. Most of the employees I've spoken to, we did some focus groups years ago, and most employees essentially screen out people with criminal records because they have no idea of how to consider those records, what questions they can and cannot ask, and so on. And if you look at risk assessment, something that's not normally done, unfortunately, when it comes to people with criminal records. The truth is that there's research by nationally known researchers like Alfred Blumstein from Carnegie Mellon that says that after 7 years, even a person with a serious robbery conviction shows no more of a propensity to offend in the workplace than a person who's never committed a crime.
You sent a letter to the EEOC last month in which you write, quote, "It seems clear that many employers have policies, stated or otherwise, that they will not hire people with criminal convictions," end quote. And we've talked about that here. But can you give some specific examples of that?
Sure. So at the Fortune Society, we do over 400 placements of individuals into mostly entry-level jobs here in the New York City labor market. And a big part of the work done by our job placement folks is to educate employees on the fact that they can't come out and say, "Don't send me anyone with a felony record." So if you even look on Craigslist, I mean, if you type in "no criminal record" on Craigslist, you'll see that there are many employers who blatantly still come out and say, "We don't hire anyone with a felony." So you have things like, just by way of comparison, you have the Americans with Disability Act. So you don't have many employers that'll lean across the desk and say, "You know what, I really like you, but you're in that wheelchair," because they know what the ramifications would be. Mm-hmm. Yet you still have many employers that say, "You know, yes, you're qualified and I really like you, but you have a felony record and I'm not going to hire you." And that's equally against the law.
Okay, excellent example. Let's take a call from Lloyd in Paramus, New Jersey. Lloyd, you're on WNYC.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
I'm sorry. My experience was, I had a conviction, which was a plea bargain, and I revealed it to them through the interview process. It was really a fairly simple thing. It wasn't. It was possession of having a bullet, basically, which was something that I found on the road and was in my trunk of my car. It was a long-involved story, but I did not get that job. It was a $75,000 a year job. I found out through the grapevine at that company that they looked at my arrest record, because also in my trunk was a BB gun, and in the state of New Jersey, a BB gun is considered a handgun. Hmm. So the base, they went even further, beyond the conviction and looked at my arrest record and said, "Oh, this guy has an arrest for a gun possession," and didn't hire me on that basis. So I guess you could say that it goes way beyond just conviction. If you've not been convicted of a crime and you have an arrest that says it, that's going to affect you as well.
Lloyd, thank you very much for that call. You raised several very important points. The first one being that many people who don't work in law enforcement or have no contact with the system don't know or understand that a plea bargain equals a conviction. So that's number one. But Glenn, let me come back over to you.
Sure.
Let's make clear for listeners that the law as it currently stands applies to not only convictions but also to arrests. Is that not right?
Yes. So the guidance also says that an arrest that didn't lead to conviction is not fair game in hiring decisions, except where in the absence of a justifiable business necessity, if you will. So for the most part, an arrest that didn't lead to conviction is not a fair game. New York State's law goes even further and has even more protections under the human rights law for arrests that didn't lead to conviction. Because the truth of the matter is, if you look at our stop and frisk policies here in New York City even, or our marijuana arrest policies and so on, I mean, in certain neighborhoods here in New York City, it isn't too difficult to end up with a pair of handcuffs on. It has a lot to do with where you live and the color of your skin.
And your proposed changes would directly affect a caller like our last caller, Lloyd. One of the main concerns of the EEOC is that the use of background checks adversely affects African Americans and Latinos. We don't know Lloyd's race, of course, but as you just mentioned, and as we know, this policy, given incarceration rates and arrest rates and stop and frisk, adversely affects African Americans and Latinos. But say a little bit more about the actual numbers.
Sure.
Especially when we talk about criminal history. 92 million Americans, one in four adults, have some kind of criminal history, according to the Department of Justice. Right, Glenn?
Sure. Just this week, our mayor here in New York City, Mayor Bloomberg, launched a Young Males Initiative to help young men of color to enter the mainstream. And one of the four areas that he focused on was criminal justice, a clear indication that's one of the most significant barriers to young people of color entering the labor market. I mean, when you talk about black men have four times the likeliness of having a felony record than their white counterparts. And so any policy that says, you know, if you have a felony, then we're not going to hire you, disproportionately affects them just by virtue of having that criminal history.
All right, let's take a call. I'm Jamie Floyd. Before I do that, I should remind everyone I'm Jamie Floyd. I'm in for Brian Lehrer today. And right now we are talking about the use of criminal background checks in employer hiring. My guest is Glenn Martin. He is the Vice President of Development and Public Affairs for the Fortune Society. That's a nonprofit in New York that works with formerly incarcerated people. And now let's take that call. Kate is calling from White Plains. Kate, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so about 20 years ago, I was involved in a protest. I was a nun, and it was a protest dealing with politics in Latin America. The protest was in New York City. Anyway, I was arrested, and I had to get rid of the record, so I got a lawyer, and I had to do community service. Anyway, a few years ago, I applied for a job, and they told me that my fingerprints had never been cleared by the FBI. I had a record, and until I got it cleared, which I thought it had been cleared, I was told it was cleared by the judge, but apparently that is still there. I didn't even know where to begin to clear that up.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story for so many reasons, the first being that, of course, it should have been cleared if you did your community service. But Glenn, I imagine you hear that kind of story all the time. Thank you, Kate, so much for sharing that story.
Yeah, that's the first thing I was going to say, is that Kate's story is actually not unusual at all in my line of business. She should probably call the Legal Action Center in New York, who can probably help her with getting that case sealed. About 60% of official fingerprint-based criminal records here in New York State are inaccurate, often missing dispositions. And the FBI essentially gets their information from New York State's repository. And while they're trying now to clean up those records going back 30 or 40 years, the majority of people whose rap sheets I've helped to obtain, we have to do a lot of work on actually bringing the rap sheet up to par and sealing things that should be sealed and so on. We do have levels of suppression here in New York, certain information that employers cannot see if they're sealed, cases that ended in favorable dispositions, but unfortunately, because of human error and so on, people end up in the position that your caller is in.
Now, we did read from your letter to the EEOC. To be fair, we should read a bit from the National Retail Federation. letter to the EEOC on the issue of background checks. Here in part is what they said. One of the most important ways to create safe working environments is for employers, principals, and volunteer organizations to be able to conduct criminal background checks of employees, independent contractors, and volunteers. We understand the frustration some have in finding employment, especially in a time of national economic stress, and we also appreciate the strong desire to reintegrate former prisoners into American society. However, attempts to ease unemployment or reentry desires should not come at the expense of keeping people and businesses safe from physical or financial harm. So, Glenn, that sounds reasonable enough. Do you agree with any part of what the National Retail Federation is saying there?
Yeah, I mean, I think employees have legitimate liability concerns, and I totally understand the public safety argument. But you know what? Keeping people out of the labor market doesn't lend itself to public safety. So you're actually doing employees a disservice by suggesting they should have blanket policies of not considering people with criminal records, because that means that some of the most qualified candidates get screened out before employees even have a chance to make that decision. I mean, we're arguing for employees to actually have access to more information so that they can make the type of decisions that lend themselves to what employees really care about, which is the bottom line, having a really good employee on board, trained, ready to engage in customer service. And a lot of our folks bring those skills to the table.
And I guess the most important takeaway would be that the larger society benefits when former offenders find employment. And if they don't, we all lose.
You know, I'll use my personal story, for instance. I mean, my first job I was able to land, I was making $16,000 per year. And since then, I've been able to sort of move up the career ladder and end up being the vice president of this very large social service organization, the Fortune Society. And that was all because an employer was willing to give me that chance, even though it was an entry-level job and I was probably more qualified for a different job, to be quite honest. But it was an opportunity. And if you look at things like the fact that I pay taxes, I own property, I pay property taxes, I pay child support, I'm not on public assistance, I've paid all fines, fees, and restitutions, it seems like a win-win to me.
All right. Well, we thank you very much for sharing your personal story, Glenn Martin, as well as representing the point of view of the Fortune Society and all of the formerly incarcerated people that the Fortune Society works with on this issue of Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and criminal background checks. And we hope you'll come back as the issue moves forward.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for being with us. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Right now, the EEOC is soliciting written comments from members of the public on their website, www.eeoc.gov, and the comments period will close tomorrow, so please make your comments now, especially if you tried to comment on the air and did not get through. Coming up next, we will talk about the mindset of your generation, and we'll take your calls.